Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very sad episode of Constructive Criticism. I am your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Casey Bloodworth.
Hey, what's up?
And a man who claims he doesn't like Kesha, Magic Mike Hinderocker.
I don't know if I'm contractually allowed to speak anymore, but hey, how's it going?
He already said, how's it going?
I thought he said, hey, what's up?
I did.
That's right. That's right.
We won't stand for these allegations.
Honestly, Michael, I'm a little disappointed right now.
That's okay.
Like, I'm hurt to my core.
I live to disappoint.
I don't believe that. I think
have you met me?
Have, yeah. He says that with the biggest smile on his face.
He just lives to disappoint.
Who won't disappoint you? is Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com. And you can get $400 store credit to Oasis Games.
Tell them how.
Logo contest. So very early in this podcast, we did a logo contest for Constructive Criticism to come up with our logo. I love our logo, like, very much. And the guy that did it was, like, super understanding, because I think we made him change it, like,
20 times, yeah.
Yeah.
We were meticulous.
Only 20.
Slave drivers.
Wow.
And he was amazing. But Oasis Games is looking for a new logo. They want the logo to be, at the end, instead of Oasis Games, MTG Oasis is the name of the logo design. They want it to be, have some kind of magic sub-theme, as well as an Oasis sub-thing without stealing the IP. And they want the logo to have also... MTG Oasis Cafe and MTG Oasis Chile for different uses for the store. And they just want you to email your logo design to alex@oasisccg.com. And it is a great cause. Like, I love Oasis Games. We talk about it all the time. And $400 to Oasis Games is like, I mean.
You buy a lot of Hot Pockets.
That's true. If
but
you were
they
in,
won't ship them to you.
That's probably not true. They probably would.
What does it cost to ship frozen things? Actually, do Hot Pockets even have to stay frozen? Is it even, like, bad if they thaw out?
I'm pretty sure they're
supposed
to.
Who's that magic streamer that gave out Hot Pocket coupons?
That's David Levitt.
Yeah, ask him. He would know.
Well, those are coupons.
Well,
I mean, we're not sending out coupons. We're shipping
Hot Pockets.
I'm sure
that he's also, you know, he's like, you could win this Hot Pocket. And he just has a Hot Pocket steaming on a plate. I don't know.
You gotta come and get it, though.
Would the play be hot? It seems like it would be. I don't know.
But you can win $400 to Oasis by submitting a logo.
And there are better things than Hot Pockets there, frankly. Like,
significantly.
Yeah. The Hot Pockets are not your best option.
Yeah. I would buy, like, a Mox or something. Maybe some Dual Lands. But yeah, if you want to win $400 store credit to Oasis Games, just go ahead and submit your logo to alex@oasisccg.com. If for some reason you can't remember that, you can send it to me and I'll get it to Alex. But so just an Oasis sub-theme as well as a Magic sub-theme. He says that it can just be as simple as including the colors of Magic in the logo. But yeah, he is excited about it and we're excited to bring you that contest. We'll talk about it for the next couple weeks. You can also get 15% off of your first order at Oasis by going to oasisgamesslc.com. MTGOasis.com and using the code CCMTG at checkout. You can get 4% off of every order by using the code Would That Be Good. You can also support the podcast directly by going to Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/CCMTG to become a patron of the show. And we have a lot of new patrons to talk about this week. So we have Aaron. Shout out to Aaron. We have Chris. Shout out to Chris. We have Alan. Shout out to Alan. We have Adriano. Shout out to Adriano. We have Sean. Shout out to Sean. We have Jared. Shout out to Jared. We have Lonnie. Shout out to Lonnie. We have Nicholas. Shout out to Nicholas. We have Casey. Shout out to Casey.
Casey, why did you become a patron of our podcast?
Not that Casey.
Oh.
I mean, it just seemed good. I hear good things about it.
That's crazy, though. That's a ton.
So... I'll say it now, just like I said before, if every person who listened to the show just gave $1 per month, it would change our lives. I could quit my job. I could pay these guys to do this show more than they already get paid from Oasis, and it would make a significant change in our lives. Even if just half of you did that, I could quit my job. So,
and if just one of you subscribed for $1 million,
we joked about that a lot in the past. But like, yeah, if somebody wants to buy the company,
we could buy an official cult goat. We could do some really sweet stuff.
I don't want to know about what stuff you want to do with a goat.
Give it to I'm Manny. Uncomfortable. I want to give it to Manny.
He wants to film it. That's like his idea of what he wants to do on the YouTube channel is like videos of giving Manny goats. Like every month he'll just show up to Manny's house with a different goat.
Are you telling me you wouldn't watch that?
I would watch that.
That sounds like
Manny would be so upset by like the 15th goat.
He'd be upset by the first goat, right? Especially if you like just approached him like in random public places, right? Like he's like
you brought it into his work. Brought you a goat. See you later.
So I would put
he's like waiting in line at Chipotle. Here's a goat.
No, I would put like an HD GoPro on the goat's head and then stream it on Twitch as the goat channel.
But the problem is,
and I would just, you know, set the like, man, it would be great.
Well, the problem is if you tune into the goat channel, you're expecting to see goats, right? But if you're not to see things from a goat's perspective.
Well, we'll also attach an overhead GoPro.
The goat life channel.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, we'll attach an overhead GoPro as well to follow it around.
Oh, sure.
So we'll get a third and a first person perspective. It's going to be great.
Oh, you like can put like a backpack on it that like has a camera.
Oh, yeah. Like a boom camera thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
It's going to be great.
Things we would do if you gave us $1 million to make content.
If there's ever been a more ringing endorsement to not give us $1 million. Like one of them I've
We are diversifying our content.
A lot.
You can't have just one focus.
There's just tons of things. We would make the How Is That a Stat podcast, the Is She Hot podcast, by the way, not
video cast,
not pictures,
patent
not
pending.
Yeah, can't use that. It's proprietary. The goat life Twitch channel. There's things we would do. Oh man. All right. You can support this kind of content by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. I can't keep a straight face right now.
Alternatively, if you know you'd just like us to continue making magic content, you can like include a note that this money is specifically not for goats.
Yeah, as long as you don't spend this money on
goats.
What if
they say it's specifically for goats? Like, what if somebody was like, $300 per month, you must buy goats with this money?
I wouldn't say no. That sounds great. I would love to harass Manny by buying him goats.
Well, so like,
what would you do with the goat afterwards?
That's Manny's problem, not my problem. It's his goat.
This is so. PETA is going to attack us.
Here's the thing. We're gonna open like a.
Well, I'm gonna sick like a goat, herd on
like
him.
A CCMTG goat petting zoo.
Oh no, I was thinking like a goat.
A refuge for goats.
No, like a restaurant.
What?
Oh man! All right.
What? Oh
yeah, you see exactly where this is going.
Yeah, and then you get.
Let's move on to hashtag always improving. Hashtag always improving is the point of this podcast. It is not the goats. It is the self awareness and the improvement. We believe if you're not getting better, you are getting worse, and we always want to be doing what we can to get any better. I can see the goat thoughts in your head right now, Casey Bloodworth.
They don't call him the idea man for nothing.
Yeah.
What? Just say it so we can move on.
Well, so okay. So there's the Goat Pro channel, right? That's step one. And then
yeah, Goat
it's,
Pro.
It's like a, it's like farm to table kind of experience. You can stream it in the restaurant.
You stream their life and then eat them? That just seems unnecessary and cruel.
It would be a very high end restaurant.
Casey, what did you do to improve magic this week?
This week. Just mostly trying to continue from, you know, what we talked about last week on the podcast, not going on tilt, not being upset by silly things, you know, when things do start to run bad, like just really focusing on it and not letting myself tilt out, learning from my own words and our own words.
Yeah, it was interesting because like as we brought up the topic, you specifically mentioned how you feel like that's something that you could be improving on right now, that you had felt like you were bad at it at this moment in your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been kind of like a little bit of a tough string in terms of just things happening in Magic. And I was determined this week to not let it bother me.
Cool. Michael, what about you? What did you do to be hashtag always improving this week?
I played a format that I really don't play that much. I was sort of nervous about driving to Vancouver and feeling like I needed to get some bro points to make it worth it. Managed to grind it out and get three of them. So was really happy with just like... I just feel like I could have kind of sat it out and said, I'll wait for a better opportunity and just like going and getting it. I lost round 14 and was kind of upset because of the way that it happened, but I bounced back to win round 15, get that extra pro point, get some cash.
Cool. And $1,000 cash. So you're
two for two
on top 16 in your last two GPs.
Last one was top 32.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Yeah. My breakers were real good this time though.
Good.
So
good. The entire PPTQs in Utah were following you guys really well. I probably was asked how you two were doing 100 times this weekend.
I was trying. I had a good matchup in round 14. I won game one, and games two and three did not go my way. But getting that win in round 15 to get the three pro points out of the weekend instead of two is a big deal. It makes it a lot easier. Getting an 11-4 is a lot easier than a 12-3. And
awesome.
Now at this point, one 11-4 will get me silver. So
good. That will qualify you for two pro tours.
Yes. Yes.
So, an interesting hashtag always improving moment this weekend because it happened throughout the weekend. So I played in two PPTQs this weekend, unfortunately, because I didn't win the first one. And I played a Immolating Glare in my deck list at the caution of Michael Hinderocker and Quentin Pierce. And I didn't really think about it before I put the card in my deck. I just said, my friend said to play this card. I'm going to play this card. And it won. It could have ended. I mean, it definitely cost me games. But it also caused me to be upset late in the tournament, which is a me problem, not a them problem or the card problem. But there was a time where it was in my hand if it had been a... Blessed Alliance, the card that I cut it for, it would have won me the game. Also, there were other times where I was facing down Lumbering Falls, where if it had been the right card, it also would have been better. You know, instead of like raging about it and like being upset, I just immediately was like internalized, like, okay, what? Let's like write down the game. So when I went to bed that night, I actually like. Went through my matches like, when would it have been better? When would it have been worse? And then I just made the appropriate decision at that time as to what card to play. What I should have done before the tournament and before putting the card in my deck. And then the next day, I did end up playing the second Blessed Alliance. But what was the learning moment was... I think that I feel like, at times, my friends don't listen to me when it comes to Magic. So... Sometimes I'll try and force myself to listen to my friends. And what I need to realize is that listening to your friends is not the same as doing what your friends say. Listening to your friend is just taking their feedback and internalizing it, which is not what I did. I should have done that and then come to whatever conclusion was the correct conclusion, which is what I ended up doing. But it was an important moment for me because it was like, it did two things. I think it's going to make me a better friend and teammate to the people I play Magic with and how they approach my feedback and then also how I approach their feedback. And that's huge because I think that like getting and receiving feedback is how you improve at Magic in a lot of ways. And I think that because of this weekend, I'm better at that.
I think a lot of it too is just like it's about you have to be happy with your own deck list. Right, that like other people.
I was unhappy with my deck list,
but ultimately, like the choice has to be yours, right? That like
sure.
You can receive feedback from other people, and sometimes they're right, and sometimes they may be wrong, or you know, just the way things work out. Obviously, a single tournament is just going to be a small sample, but like ultimately, it's your decision, and if you like one card better, that's a good enough reason. You don't need to justify it to other people. Right. If you think your choice is correct, it's okay to disagree. Like,
I also want to make an apology here. I got a lot of congratulations from people this weekend on, oh, it's so cool you top into two PPTQs in one weekend. And I was like really mean about it. And I kind of want to apologize and say I should never take congratulations the way that I did this weekend. So I'm sorry if the way I took it was rude. I should never be that way, and I am sorry. But I also want to explain, my goal is definitely not to top 8 PPTQs. I think I've top 8 in my last 6 PPTQs. I just actually don't care. My goal is to win PPTQs at this point. It wasn't a year ago, and I was happy with top 8s because, like, it was getting me product, and I wasn't trying to get to the Pro Tour. And the reason that I reacted the way I did is because I already know I can top 8 PPTQs, and I already know that I can win them. And winning them only gets me to the next point of my goal. And so I'm sorry for the way I reacted. I promise not to react that way again. But at the same time, it is definitely not my goal to top 8 PPTQs. So I hope that people can understand that.
Well, and it's good to have those set for yourself, right? To, like, be able to put your achievements or accomplishments in the context of your own ability and your own expectations.
Yeah, yes. And the way that I reacted by, like, complaining, or not even complaining, but, like, not in the form of gratitude, was definitely incorrect. Because, like, they're saying something nice to me, and I'm saying, whatever, it didn't matter.
Right, where the intent, what they're really saying is, you know, I think you did a good job this weekend.
And
right.
Exactly. And that I should be cognizant of what they're saying, not what I'm what I'm feeling and thinking in here. Like, does that make sense?
I think that's a really good point. And it's hard to do that sometimes when you're frustrated with yourself or with any kind of external situation.
Yeah, I think this happens a lot too. Like, when this happened, like, at the, when I went to the Pro Tour, right? And, like, I came back and people were like, congratulations on day 2 in your first Pro Tour. And I was like, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. But, like, I didn't, I was, like, upset that I didn't do better. When, in fact, they're just saying, congratulations.
Just congratulating you. And it is tough because if you fall wildly short of your own goal, right, you're going to feel like you failed. But that's not, there is sometimes, one, a silver lining, right? And then, two, there are many people who have never done the thing that you consider a failure.
Well, and it's not even, I think sometimes it's just putting things in context that, like, you can fall short of your goal and still have it be something that's difficult to do. You know, it's not easy to win every PPTQ you play in. It's not easy to day 2 a Pro Tour. It's about, like, receiving feedback and understanding that they're not being critical of you in the same way that you're being self-critical, right? They are legitimately just saying, hey, nice job. I thought you did a good job.
And to kind of touch on that a little bit, I think a huge part of that for me is I need to be more, I don't know if self-aware is correct, but, like, when somebody is telling you good job, it's coming from a place of sincerity. And
unless they say it like, good job, then that's not sincere.
Yeah, if I'm saying it to Casey, he knows it's a dig. But, like, you know, that's different.
Right.
Good job, Casey. but I want to be better at that. And especially, like, in context with our listeners, and I appreciate that kind of congratulatory behavior. And I push it so hard on our community, right? That, like congratulations on winning your first game day. Congratulations on winning your first FNM, right? Like, I
and that's sincere, right?
Yeah, I mean it when I say that.
Right.
So I need to understand that they mean it when they say it to me. So I want to apologize and also say I will be better. So that's my hashtag always improving moment. That's what I will take with me to be hashtag always improving.
That's sweet. I think that's, like, actually a really hard thing to get good at. I know I definitely struggle with that same thing. Like, just when you're frustrated with yourself, it's hard to it's hard to see that other people can still, like, see the good in what you did.
Yeah. And there's definitely a lesson to be learned on just having the right attitude about things.
Yeah. Let's go on to our Patreon question of the week. So every week on the show, we invite patrons of the show, $1 or more per month. You too can participate in this, and we even will do something like a deck doctor, which is what we're doing this week. So I'm going to read the deck list that was submitted by Adrian, and then we're going to talk about it a little bit. So it is...
Can we also get this posted in the Facebook group when you throw up the show?
Yeah.
Just so that there's like a list available.
Yep, absolutely. It will be in the show notes of the show as well as in the Facebook group. We have 4 Blighted Agent, 1 Dryad Arbor, 4 Glistener Elf, 4 Noble Hierarch, 1 Spellskite, 2 Become Immense, 4 Might of Old Carossa, 3 Mutagenic Growth, 4 Vines of Vastwood, 2 Dismember, 4 Groundswell, 1 Apostle's Blessing, 2 Blossoming Defense, 1 Spell Pierce, 2 Breeding Pool, 2 Forest, 4 Inkmoth Nexus, 2 Misty Rainforest, 2 Pendlehaven, 1 Verdant Catacombs, 2 Windswept Heath, 1 Wooded Foothills, 3 Botanical Sanctum. It also has 2 Distortion Strike and 2 Sleight of Hand. Its sideboard is 3 Grafdigger's Cage, 2 Kitchen Finks, 1 Viridian Corruptor, 1 Spellskite, 1 Seal of Primordium, 2 Nature's Claim, 1 Spell Pierce, 2 Twisted Image, 1 Dispel, and 1 Pulse of Marasa. Let's start with what we love. Guys, what do you love about this decklist?
I do like that it's looking very clean. Like, the ends mostly make sense. You've got a pretty good package of, like, dig versus pump spells versus creatures, like, in the main deck. Everything looks... The numbers of everything look like they make sense to me right now.
Yeah,
is a good starting point.
I really like the numbers of... There's a lot of protection spells in this deck list between Spellskite, Vines, Apostle's Blessing, Blossoming Defense, and Spell Pierce. And I was really impressed. I don't know how Affinity and or how Infect rather ended up finishing up in Vancouver, but it surprised me how reasonable it looked. It feels like
you have to have more protection spells now that you don't have get taxing probe too.
It's true, but you can't
make informed decisions.
There was a little bit less fatal push than I had anticipated, and I feel like Infect really is probably a reasonable place to be right now if it's something you like. I like the Distortion Strikes a lot right now. That card seemed really, really powerful when I was watching Infect this weekend.
Yeah, one of the things that I liked is Distortion Strike also. I also really like the main deck Spellskite right now, as well as, like Michael said, the number of... I think we're actually thinking the same thing here, Michael. I think that you can't play the same deck, and it's important that, like, you get the right number of effects. So, like, I think 2 Dismember is the right number. I think that, the number of spells that you're playing is the right number of spells between Spell Pierce and things like that. Let's move on to... Oh, also, I do think that Sleight of Hand in some number is correct.
Yeah, I think just need to replace the actual, like, card.
Yeah, I also like that he chose Sleight of Hand specifically.
Interesting. I played against someone playing Serum Visions, and I wasn't sure whether that or Sleight of Hand would have been more powerful.
Yeah, I think that Sleight of Hand is better.
They're close, right? I mean,
I think it's pretty close, but I think that so often you're going to want to cast, like, you're not playing long games. And Sleight of Hand is much better at finding the spell that's going to kill you right now.
It's true. I liked the ability of Serum Visions to sort of hide a card from... I feel like there's like a lot of... With the Jund, Delirium, Death Shadow, Traverse decks, there's like a lot of Thought Seizes and Inquisitions running around.
Sure.
Because that deck is playing like 7 of them.
Yeah, I guess I like Serum Visions is better on turn 1, and Sleight of Hand is better like on turn 3.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just slightly different, and I would have to play more to have a more informed opinion.
Well, let's go into what we would change. I have one that I have probably been preaching on this podcast for forever, and I believe it very strongly. I don't think so often people will try and dig into the Infect well for other things. They'll play Ichor Claw Mirror or whatever to try and get their number of Infect creatures up. Because the deck honestly doesn't play enough. Like,
yeah, because there aren't enough. You play all the playable ones.
But, right, the problem is there's an insane drop-off after these 12, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There's an insane drop-off after Blighted Agent.
I think that you need to be playing a Viridian Corruptor main. I think it will give you an inappropriate number of wins for how good the card actually is. And give you an increase in the number of keepable hands you have.
Yeah, I agree. And I also don't like Dryad Arbor main deck very much, so I would switch those.
That's also what I was going to say. I would just straight out switch it for a Viridian Corruptor.
I'm a little ambivalent on Dismember at the moment. I feel like the format, there are more sort of like the there are more big mana decks and more decks that are playing just creatures that are extremely large, like only Tarmogoyfs and Death Shadows, that I'm a little ambivalent about Dismember in the main deck right now. And I think you might just need a little more consistency in having that be some kind of a
like a Vapor actual Snag?
Well, no, like just a spell that's better at protecting. I'm just not sure how much you can afford to mimic the deck lists of before when you don't have Probe and you don't have as many Becomances.
I do like Dismember right now. I think it reasonably can kill a Tarmogoyf. As well as I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I'm certainly not saying that I'm unequivocally correct on this. I'm sort of spitballing
here. I've always thought these decks wanted more blossoming defenses, personally, but
and yeah. I am a little bit ambivalent about if we're playing less Becomances, I'm a little bit ambivalent about Spell Pierce compared to Blossoming Defense, just for kind of the same reason that, like, if I don't know what my opponent has, I would rather have a proactive protection spell than a reactive protection spell, given sure. that it's hard to... One of the things I liked about Spell Pierce before was you sort of knew when you had to just spend it as quickly as possible and when you were supposed to hold it. And I can't help but wonder that if it's going to be a little bit hard to hold it up correctly, because this deck wants to spend all its mana in the early turns so much of the time,
yeah,
that it's a little bit tricky to play with.
The only really compelling argument for Spell Pierce to me is Liliana of the Veil, which, in addition to its like traditional home in Jund and Abzan, is now being played in Death Shadow. So Liliana of the Veil is like pretty popular.
A bunch of the Death Shadow lists were playing the new Liliana instead of the Veil.
Oh, were they? Okay.
Yeah.
I think even an Abzan deck that I saw was playing two Veil and one of the new Liliana.
Sure, sure.
I think that a split of some kind is usually correct. I didn't realize that they were playing new Liliana in that deck.
It's a relatively even split, but most people are playing all of one or all of the other.
It actually makes sense because that deck is a Delirium deck, so it would rather just mill itself and get back its threats.
It's also relatively threat light in general.
Right.
Yeah. But I was surprised at how reasonable Infect looked this weekend. I think this list is like pretty close. Right? I mean, I like the Botanical Sanctums if we're playing more blue spells. So like if we're playing like Sleight of Hands and Distortion Strikes, I like the idea of not having to fetch shock so much.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I completely agree. I don't have any major issues with that. I think that if you just put that Dryad Arbor in the sideboard, put that Corruptor in the main, I like your sideboard. I agree with Michael. I think that you could probably just play that Blossoming Defense as a Spell Pierce. I it's hard for me to say like that number of mutagenic growths is correct, but I don't know.
I would think that's personal preference as much as anything.
Sure.
It probably is mostly just dependent on what you actually like. I think that card has probably increased in value slightly without Gitaxian Probe, because I think having just the zero mana sort of proactive reactive split spell is relatively powerful. But I think this looks really solid. So you're running a lower fetch count because of the Botanical Sanctums. I wonder if you could get away with cutting one land, either a Botanical Sanctum or a basic forest, for another fetch land, just to make those Becomances ever so slightly better.
Yeah. So that is the deck doctor this week for our patron, Adrian.
Sorry, another thing. I still don't know if I can buy into the whole Pulse of Marasa thing. I know we talked about it last time. I don't know if it was Adrian's deck or if it was somebody else's.
It was Adrian's, but it didn't make the podcast.
Oh, okay. I still don't know if I can, like, I get the idea, I think, but I don't. I think that it's just way too slow for what the deck is trying to do.
I wonder, so...
Michael actually sounds like
I
you
wonder
like it.
If that was a split card for, like, Grishelbrand and Burn.
Why don't you talk about that?
So the idea being that if someone Goryeo's Vengeances, it's, like, sort of a weird graveyard hate card that you can respond to a Goryeo's Vengeance.
I'm so confused. What does Pulsemorosa do that I don't understand?
It returns a creature or land to its owner's hand or to from, it. Yeah.
Yes, from you can target graveyard. A spell in their graveyard.
So if they Goryeo's Vengeance, a Gristlebrand, you can return it to their hand in response.
Okay.
And then gain 6, and it fizzles the spell. Plus, you can also obviously return your own creatures against burn. It feels like it's probably slightly like when you start talking about things with double applications. It's not always wrong, but it's sort of, there's a high chance that it's not quite good enough at either, and that is my inclination, just without any real evidence.
I actually really, really like this card against Burn for this deck, because I think the way you lose is them, like, that you can't keep a creature in play, and if you get a creature that they burn back and gain 6 life, I think they would have a real problem with that.
Yeah, I worry a little bit about just being kind of slow and a little bit clunky. Like, it's a card you want to draw, not a card you really want to draw.
Isn't that how that matchup will go?
Sometimes you just kind of get trapped by Eidolon. You get trapped by Eidolon.
You think it's a butt-whooping, right?
Yeah, and
so do I.
I don't think a 3-mana spell is, like... I think almost all the games you win on turn 2. I just don't, like...
Like you go first and play Glistener Elf, and they suspend Riftbolt, and then they die. I found a lot of the time you get locked out under an Eidolon, and just, like... pulsing something back is too
probably
slow.
Not that helpful. All right. Well, that is our feedback on this. It was so funny. As we were doing this, I was like, why weren't we doing this the whole time on Constructive Criticism? It's literally the name of the podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
A huge oversight on our part. If you want to get a deck doctor done on one of your deck lists, have us critique it, give you our feedback. Become a patron of the show, $1 per more. There's a thread for deck doctors. And we would be happy to talk about your deck during this segment as well. Thank you, everybody who currently is a patron. You can go to patreon.com/CCMTG to become a patron of the show. Let's go into our power rankings. So every week on the show, we talk about a format and what's going on in that format. This week, there were 2 modern GPs. And there is an anti-shoutout for Michael being a jerk by giving 2 points to Dredge for his personal benefit.
Yeah, really trying to influence the power rankings in a negative way by moving Dredge up.
I would say it's a positive way, but you know.
Well, let's explain how these decks get points, Casey.
All right, so we pull the results from the tournaments that we're evaluating. In this case, 2 GPs. You get 6 points for winning the event, 5 for second place, 4 for top 4, 3 for top 8, 2 for top 16, and 1 for top 32 if it's available. Add them up and see what decks kind of had the best performance of the weekend. And Michael, top 16, Jen. Grand Prix Vancouver, earning 2 points for Dredge. That's what we're talking about here.
Okay. Is top 32 2?
1.
That's not right. So it's 6 for first, 5 for second.
4 for top 4, 3 for top 8, 2 for top 16, 1 for top 32.
Oh, I'm just wrong.
Yep.
Good talk. Put me in my place live. On Constructive Criticism. You're not listening to it live, but it happened live.
I mean, and criticism is the second word of the podcast. I
appreciate it. I mean, I don't know that he criticized.
I don't know that it was that constructive.
You tried to criticize me, and I shot you
criticism.
Down.
No, I feel like we keep, like, there was one point where it went all the way down to top 64, but I don't know.
Usually we don't get a top 64. When we do,
I usually
give half a point.
Sure. Well, let's talk about the decks that all, jumbled together for 8 points. We have Abzan, Bant Eldrazi, and Lantern Control. Let's start with Lantern Control. What is this deck doing in the format right now?
Kind of the same thing as always. It's up to no good. You know, you are trying to win with Lantern of Insight, trying to control what your opponent draws against you, and, mill their top cards when they're good, make them draw lands. You know, it's just the most brutal control deck that you can almost devise of, like from a very sadistic place.
Yeah, it's been pretty good now for a while. I feel like the modern metagame has sort of settled into a place where this deck has been, like, at least a reasonable choice for a pretty long period of time. And it's the kind of deck that I think rewards you for your ability to play it quite well. It's not an extremely easy deck to play. There's kind of a lot of moving pieces, and understanding how they all fit together is a little tricky.
Yeah, very much so.
But I think it's the kind of deck where you can really leverage your play skill advantage over an opponent, and I think that's appealing to a lot of people.
Yeah, usually, I mean, this time is no exception. This deck won the Grand Prix in Australia, which accounted for most of its points, right? And that's what we see a lot, is this deck doesn't, like, put up huge numbers of performances, but tends to do very well in the hands of experienced players of the
deck. It's also just not that popular a deck. Right. I think this deck was also sort of coincidentally well-positioned this week in the sense that a lot of the decks that were relatively successful were graveyard-based decks, and this deck typically main decks some Surgical Extractions and has access to more graveyard hate out of the board. Largely because Surgical is usable almost more like a discard spell in this deck than most.
Yeah, very true.
Like, you'll end up very weak to specific cards, so if you can, like, mill a Valakut and then Surgical them, that is one of your paths to victory against Scapeshift. And then if you happen to play against, you know, Dredge and Living End, it really is extremely pleasant to just, you know, look down at your deck and say, oh, I'm playing main deck Surgical Extraction. This is so nice.
Yeah. Well, and yes. Just being able to, you know, sometimes keep them off of the ways that can destroy your Ensnaring Bridge, right? Like, just really close out the game.
Well, and in game one, there are plenty of decks that literally cannot beat an Ensnaring Bridge, Dredge being almost one of them. I mean, I guess technically you could, you know, Dredge Life from the Loam and get them with a Conflagrate or something
not
similar.
Not if I Surgical Extraction your Conflagrate.
Right, but there are not a whole lot of outs for Dredge. I would imagine Living End is in the same boat. There's just not really... There's a certain point where there just actually aren't really ways to win left in your deck, and if the metagame moves towards more decks where, you know, this is really problematic, where, like, having specific cards ripped out of your graveyard is really problematic, Lantern feels reasonably well-positioned.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Abzan and Bant Eldrazi, kind of, not really similar decks in the way they are built, but similar in the way they play, right? You're playing the mid-range creatures, a little bit of removal.
Yeah, I like both these decks a lot. They're very, like, they are very safe choices. I don't think there's, like, a specific metagame where either of these decks are dominant, but in the hands of good players, these are just, like, very safe and just, they're just good. They are just good decks full of good cards and can do things that feel borderline oppressive out of a mid-range shell.
Right. You're not quite stone cold to anything, right? You have the right combination of cards to beat anybody. You just have to, you know, not... And you're not likely to take a lot of mulligans with these decks. Bant Eldrazi more so. You do take mulligans.
But you also have some more... I mean, the 4-4 Thoughtseize for two is, you know...
Yeah, you do get a trade-off by going up in power level by sacrificing a little bit of consistency compared to Abzan or Jund, but... Abzan, you don't really take a lot of mulligans because your cards are all pretty close in power level, as long as you're not, like, on an insane all lands, no lands kind of hand.
Yeah.
It's likely keepable.
I mean, and there you just, it's like, it's Tarmogoyf and Liliana and Lingerings. Your card quality is so high.
Right, exactly.
I feel like, you know, if you can't figure out what to play, Abzan and Jund are kind of the two fallbacks, right?
Yeah, exactly. All right, and then next up we have Eldrazi Tron with 9 points, just narrowly edging out those decks. This deck is what it sounds like. If you're not familiar with it, it plays Tron lands, but plays the Eldrazi package that you've seen time and time again out of Bant Eldrazi. It's going a little bit higher up the curve.
And there are,
like, Oblivion Sowers.
There are a whole bunch of builds of this deck, too. Yeah. There's, like, kind of a core 45 or 50, and then they really kind of deviate from there.
What did Michael end up playing, or not Michael, Danny end up playing at the GP?
Danny ended up playing Green-Red Tron. So okay. Not Eldrazi Tron. Well, he played Tron Eldrazi, not Eldrazi Tron.
Okay. What was the reason for his switch from mono green?
The poor positioning of Fog in the current metagame.
As opposed to other metagames.
Well, I think that...
I'm mostly joking, by the way. I think he wanted access to Pyroclasm and to Grove of the Burn Willows.
So what do you guys think of this deck right now?
So I actually really liked the way that I think Pascal Maynard's list was my favorite. He cut the Basilisk Collars, which are clearly terrible, and was playing both Simeon Spirit Guide and Mindstone. And I really liked, like, he played Danny in round 15 at Vancouver and crushed him mostly on the back of Simeon Spirit Guide. I think in game one he went, like, Urza Land Expedition Map into Eldrazi Temple, Exile Simeon Spirit Guide, Thought Not You, Untap Land, Thought Not You. which, you know, unsurprisingly is powerful. And I felt like his build just had some really nice ways to take advantage of the curve out potential of Eldrazi a little bit more.
Sure. Yeah. You're kind of, because most of these decks aren't really playing almost any colored spells, right?
Can we address Endbringer?
Yeah. So
can we have a conversation here about that card?
It seems pretty bad to me. I saw it do work with Basilisk Collar a couple of times, but I'm, you know, generally kind of hopeful that my six drop can just get things done on its own and doesn't really need that much help. It's a weird card. When it's good, it looks really good, but a lot of the time it's mostly a 6-mana 5/5 that can draw cards. The flip side is that, like, if your opponent can't really answer your 6-mana 5/5 and is just letting you sit around with it, you are probably going to win no matter what.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird card. I would agree with that. It sort of does like Staff of Nain Impressions by letting you draw cards and ping your opponent. And then it has Ghetto Vigilance with the untap thing. I don't know. That card is super weird. However, like, I have never seen one go uncontested that didn't dominate the game.
But how many six drops go uncontested that don't dominate a game anyways? Right, it feels sort of like a...
I mean, Wurmcoil Engine sometimes doesn't quite get there, where like this card usually...
Is Tron evolving into Mud?
This deck, I feel like, is mostly about positioning. I think that your aggressive matchups are just a little bit better, given that like you can just play out your hand faster and you're much less reliant on interacting with the board. I feel like you can shift roles, and I feel like there's a lot of room for improvement still in Eldrazi Tron. I don't know that like there's a consensus best list at this point, which
is kind of always a good sign, because you don't know.
It's good or bad, right?
Yeah, depending on
it means that if you want to work on it going forward, it's probably a good thing. It also means that you may well have played a terrible Eldrazi Tron list this weekend.
Sure.
Casey, you had a thought on my question.
Like, about Endbringer?
Well, no, just about... So, I think we saw this a little bit already in Legacy, where the Eldrazi decks are becoming like Mud, the Mud decks, just with better threats. Is that where Tron will end up? Is it going to become, well, this is just a Mud deck with better threats?
Potentially. I mean, there were people playing Chalice of the Void in this deck. Maybe everybody, I'm not sure. I haven't looked at all the lists closely. Yeah.
Most of them.
So it is certainly going in that way. And, I mean, like, we're trying to find ways to splash for Thanos here in Reality Smasher and Standard, right? Where the downside of these types of decks were always that, yeah, you can make a lot of mana, but, like, it's colorless, so what are you going to do with it? So, yeah, I mean, I think that Thanos here in Reality Smasher do play really well in the Mud or Stacks, whatever you want to call it, big mana colorless prison decks, because they're so powerful and just fit in with... They're actually, like, a cure for the deck's biggest downfall, is that all your mana is colorless. So it could be. I think that the Legacy version of this deck is pretty reasonable. People either think it's oppressive or not playable. I'm firmly in the middle of that. But I think that it could be a good spot for this deck in Modern as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are a lot of like little marginal edges that you get building your deck like this that I'm not sure like super obvious on first blush. Like the fact that you can basically play any number of utility lands and they can be any land of your choosing. Like you can play 4 Ghost Quarters in this deck if you feel like it. You could probably play Tectonic Edge. You can play, like, there are just all kinds of choices you can make that most decks don't get to. I think it's like oddly flexible in a way.
Well, yeah, if you look back to like all the way back in biblical times at Protoroth of the Gatewatch, when Team Channel Fireball kind of played a deck, you know, very similar to this in Modern, their colorless Eldrazi deck, and they were playing like 50 creature lands in their deck.
It's sort like, of like that, isn't
it? Made
it?
The deck
less,
so like so threat dense.
It's less low to the ground. And I wouldn't say this deck is like insanely threat dense in the sense that a lot of its threats aren't really all that castable in the early turns of the game. So you can sort of get like, you can't really play a bunch of Ulamogs and then say you're really threat dense, because sometimes you just don't get to play them.
Right. But, and then sometimes you're playing, you know, turn one, land Simeon Spirit Guide, Chalice of the Void, and that's the end of the game.
Right. But you definitely have, like, a lot of raw power, and you can sort of nut draw people in either direction, right? Your nut draw can be, like, Temple, Spirit Guide, Chalice on one, Temple, Thought Not Seer, Land Smasher. Like that, I mean, that sounds pretty impressive.
That's the actual nut draw.
But your nut draw can also be like Tron Land, Tron Land, Tron Land, Karn.
Yeah.
So you can kind of get people in two different directions, and I feel like you can get really rewarded for building a complete 75 with a deck like this. Like, if you're able to go up when you want to go up and go down when you want to go down, that's always a powerful place to be.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the next deck. We have, coming in next, we have the deck you played at the GP, Michael. We have Dredge. Why don't you give us a summary of, like, why you picked the deck, what's going on in the format with it right now, and how this deck isn't dead.
So Dredge is still great. Like, you're a little bit less explosive, kind of. You're basically ever so slightly less consistent. But the flip side is that you play against a lot less graveyard hate. So basically, I think I won 12 out of 13 game ones. I lost one game one to an opponent having Scavenging Ooze, Thoughtseize into Scavenging Ooze into Scavenging Ooze Thoughtseize on the play. But your game ones are really good, and there's a lot less sideboard hate than there was at the peak of the Dredge hype. So I don't know that this deck had, like, heavy representation, but I think it was a really good metagame call for this weekend at least. And I think that it shows that I don't think this deck is anywhere near dominant. I don't think it's oppressive or a problem. But if people slim down and try to cheat on graveyard hate, you can really punish them for doing that.
Awesome. Casey, do you have any thoughts on this deck? Is this deck still too good? Should this deck not be a part of the metagame?
So I think that in general, it's a deck with a play pattern that you don't really want in your format. But Modern is Modern. There's always going to be a deck like Dredge. I guess it may as well just be Dredge.
It feels a lot like Affinity, honestly, in the sense that, like, your game ones are mostly great because your opponents just, like, don't have the specific cards that are good against you. And then post board, it's basically just a question, like, if you play all opponents with four Stony Silences, you really don't want to be playing Affinity. Just like if you play a bunch of opponents with four Leyline of the Void, you really don't want to be playing Dredge.
Yeah.
And right, it's just you're basically trying to zig when they zag if you're playing this deck.
Right, and that's sort of, you know, one of my frustrations with Modern is feels like you have, like, a three-card sideboard because you have to have so much artifact hate, so much graveyard hate, whatever the flavor of the week is. And, you know, this deck does compound that problem, but it is beatable, right? If you choose to play graveyard hate, you should mostly do okay against Dredge.
Yeah.
Or just have a really fast, really powerful deck like Infect.
Yeah, I think that it encourages you. It makes it a little bit harder to play a reactive deck, but that's already the direction that Modern has been leaning for so long. I feel like anyone who's still playing it at this point probably just doesn't have a problem with that.
Let's talk about the biggest, according to Michael, let's wrap this up with the biggest misnomer in history, and that's Death Shadow Aggro.
It's just not Death Shadow Aggro. This is just Jund in disguise.
Why don't you talk about it? What's going on?
So this deck is like a Delirium deck. You play Death Shadow because you are trying, like, Street Wraith and Mistress Bauble are really good with Traverse the Ulvenwald. So then you get to play like a Gore Clan Rampager, which is really sweet with both Tarmogoyf and Death Shadow. But this deck is not really an aggro deck. You sometimes will cast an early Death Shadow, but this deck is not aiming to kill on turn three anymore. I mean, you're playing like Kolaghan's Commands and Liliana's, and it's actually quite a grindy deck that then can just splash, kill you out of nowhere. It's really interesting. It feels a lot like just an evolution of Jund to me at this point. And it's basically Jund's answer to big mana, right? You're saying, okay, well, if you think Ugin and Scapeshift are good against me, I'm going to play a deck that can kill you before you can really play Ugin and Scapeshift. And okay. I think it makes a lot of sense. It's just like it's very consistent. You have a ton of sideboard options. Your card quality is really high. And Traverse the Ulvenwald is astonishing. That card is so powerful.
Yeah, if you can get Delirium really easily, which this deck obviously can, I mean, that card is pretty close to Demonic Tutor in this deck.
The fact that you're playing Tarfire is really the number one indicator that this is a Delirium deck, not a Death Shadow aggressive deck.
Sure.
Right. Tarfire is like that. That when you see 3 to 4 Tarfires in deck lists, it is a signal that needs to be going off in your brain saying, "Okay, what are we doing here? We're getting Delirium, even when we're playing the strictly worst Lightning Bolt, right?
Yeah. The shock, as we sometimes call it.
Right. I mean, that's surprising. Like, that is a card that has basically never seen play as more than like a one of.
Yeah.
And this deck is usually playing 4. And I think what that's saying is, okay, so we don't have quite enough density of these big creatures, but if we play Traverse, we get to play Gorklan Rampager as a pump spell, which is coincidentally great with both Tarmogoyf and Death Shadow since they're so big. And then
trying to load Daily MTG right now?
No.
Oh, okay. I think it's down. I've been trying to load Daily MTG to get decklist this entire segment.
Oh, I've just been pulling them off of TCG Player.
What would you like to know about this deck list?
Well, I'm interested to see why there's not Tassigers in it, for example.
So there are no Tassigers or Becomences because it turns off your Traverses and your Tarmogoyfs.
Well, kind of.
So people have played Tassiger Tarmogoyf decks in the past, but it is
me.
Tons of people did, especially when Tassiger was new. But it's still there's certainly a tension between those cards, right?
So the idea is that Death Shadow is an actual 1-mana 5/5.
Okay.
Where Tassiger is a 1-mana 4/5 with a cost. And okay. Tassiger's...
Well, I was thinking of a 1-of Tassiger, right?
Right, and I think they're saying we can play a 4-of Death Shadow. And I
don't want to cut Death Shadow.
Right, but it makes
another threat.
It makes, but the thing is what they're saying is we can play 4 Traverse, 4 Tarmogoyf, 4 Death Shadow.
And then Death Shadow is basically Tarmogoyf for green black.
Yes, or just
guess,
for black.
If I guess you draw at that point you might as well just be playing.
You have the threat. The threat density is like
you right. You might as well be playing Grimflare instead of Tassiger at that point anyway. If you
right.
want to play another yeah. threat,
and right? Also, and you just don't need it. It's like right on the right number. You could maybe play like 1 Grimflare if you wanted to.
That was my thought. Is I wanted one more threat. That's why Tassiger came to mind.
But I think Tassiger specifically, the potential for feel bads is just slightly too high.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that even though this deck can grind, it's not really it's not a deck that really wants to. I mean, it's playing 18 lands, right? You're not trying to activate your Tassiger.
And 7 1 mana discard spells was the typical number. So this deck is trying to strip your opponent's answers to an early 5/5 and then attack you 2 or 3 times with 2 of them.
Yeah.
Right.
But although I do see, it looks like Sam Black played a Renegade Rallier, and I could believe that almost any card in Magic is better than that. It's fine. It has it certainly has a high power level, but I could see you having just as many feel bads with that as you do with Tassiger or anything else.
Well, the difference is that you can use it with a fetch land to get an extra mana source. It's good with both Tarmogoyf and Death Shadow. I don't know. It's fine. I saw people. Was he playing Liliana of the Last Hope as well, or was he playing Liliana of the Veil?
I believe he was playing Liliana of the Veil. Let me double check.
Because a bunch of them, most of the people who were playing Renegade Rallier specifically were playing Liliana
of the
Last Hope.
He was playing Liliana of the Last Hope.
Yeah, so I think that had to do with having a bunch of ways to get creatures back. It's clear to me that they were worried about Fatal Push being good against this deck. That didn't really end up being the case. But I think that a lot of their card selection, this is a deck that can kill very fast, but also has the potential to grind more than you would think.
Well, let's wrap this up. What would you guys play right now in Modern and why?
I think I'd like to work on Eldrazi Tron. I think something close to what Pascal Maynard played makes a lot of sense. I think that deck looks like a good time, and it looks really powerful. I think the Jund Death Shadow deck is also pretty sweet.
Casey?
Probably Burn? I think that has pretty good matchups against most of these decks that are doing well right now.
Yeah, I would. You could not convince me not to play Rug Scapeshift in this metagame. 0%, you could not convince me that it's not correct. It has a good matchup against every single one of these decks.
I don't believe that it has a good matchup against Lantern Control.
I think it has a great matchup against Lantern Control.
How do you ever beat a Surgical Extraction on a Volokit? Did they melt?
With a Titan?
Through an Ensnaring Bridge?
Why do they have an Ensnaring Bridge in play?
Because, I mean, they play a lot of them.
Yeah, but I play, like, artifact removal from my graveyard. And also, you know, Cryptic Command.
I mean, I think that
I literally lost to Lander Control one time, and it was because I didn't put enough lands in play off of Escape Shift
cast. Interesting. I would be curious to see, like, I don't know, the matchup does not seem intuitively good to me, but if you've had success with it, I mean, sure.
Yeah. I mean, I've only played it four times, and I did lose to it once, and he was the best Lander player I played against by a lot.
Sure. And that's the other thing I was going to say is that I don't know who you've played against, and I'm not, you know, trying to throw shade on anybody, but that deck is insanely hard to play.
Yeah, I agree. I would snap off. I haven't wanted to play Rug Escape Shifts in a long time in Modern. You know, wanting to play things like Jund or Bug or Beyonce Eldrazi, you know, just different decks I've tried because I didn't think Escape Shift had good matchups against the best decks, and I think it has a good matchup against every deck in this
entirely. I would be surprised if the Jund Death Shadow matchup is very good based on the games that I've played with and against that with various Escape Shift decks.
And it could be that the deck is like severely different, but it seems so mid-rangey to me.
So it is until it's not. So it's like Jund where they spend the first few turns ripping apart your hand, except that then you just die in one turn.
Okay.
It's like that Jund, would be a bad matchup. It's like then. Jund if you had a combo.
Okay. That would be a bad matchup.
So, I mean, think of it as like Jund in a combo deck having a baby, because
then I might just play that deck.
Like. It feels pretty Jundy. I think you'd be surprised. Like, seven discard spells plus Kolaghan's Command is, like, it's a lot.
Yeah. But that is where I am right now. I would want to start there and shape my control deck to beat these decks. Because I think that all of these decks are beatable with Brug Escape Shift. Let's go on to our training rounds. Every week on the podcast, we want to talk about something that make you better at Magic or life in general. And this is a follow-up episode to last week's episode. So last week, we talked about Tilt and, you know, recognizing when you're on Tilt and what's going on. And this week, we want to talk about something that's very, very important in life and Magic. And that's understanding that you're lucky. So the definition of luck is success or failure, depending, apparently brought on by chance rather than through one's own actions. This is something that Magic players, poker players, and human beings are just so ridiculous about.
Right, because nobody ever feels like they got lucky, right? When they win, it's because it's the universe finally balancing out.
Yeah, all the times they got unlucky.
Yep. So it's not that they got lucky, it's that now they're back to even. Getting lucky is even. Getting unlucky is the unluckiest.
Let's talk really quick. What is the time that you got super lucky, Casey?
I mean, there certainly have been, I'm trying to think of like a really good one. Probably one of my most favorite, though, was on a mulligan to three, which starts off like a bad beat story, but my three was Forest, Glistener, Elf, Rancor. So this was before the Scry rule, so this is back in the old days in Standard. So I play, you know, I'm on the play, I play Forest, Glistener, Elf, pass. My opponent plays a land or whatever. I draw Cathedral of War, equip my Rancor, attack for four, pass. My opponent plays a creature, I top deck Titanic Growth, attack my opponent for eight, kill him on turn three with trample. And my opponent's just like, yeah, okay. Which, you know, winning any game on a mulligan to three is basically, like, impossible. And I killed my opponent on turn three like it was nothing. And I had to get insanely lucky to do that. Like, I didn't make decisions in that game at all.
Those were the five cards, right?
Right, those were the cards. That happened. That was, yeah. And, you know, my opponent went from, you know, going on super on his high horse, thinking he was for sure going to win because I was on three cards, to dead playing one spell. And, you know, that's just something that can happen in Magic, but it couldn't happen without me getting insanely lucky in that game.
Michael, what's the time that you got lucky in life or Magic?
So I think about, like, a lot of the times you get lucky are actually when your opponent gets unlucky in disguise. So I played a couple of opponents this weekend who basically just, like, played a land and, like, one spell and then died to prized amalgams. And you could be like, oh, well, you know, look at how lucky I am. My draw was so good. But a big part of being lucky is, like, having your opponents not have the answer. So specifically this weekend, I played against a Jund opponent in the last round who had... So I'm on the play, and I go turn one... Insolent Neonate that puts 10 power into play, and he goes or he's on the play. So he goes turn one, whatever. I think he turned one like Thought Seizes a Faithless Looting, and I go turn one Insolent Neonate, put 10 power into play, you know, because I had like a Narcomoeba and 3 Prized Amalgams in my top 4 cards. And then he goes turn 2 Scavenging Ooze and dies like 3 turns later. So he had Thought Seize into Scavenging Ooze, and I had 10 power on turn 1 and somehow beat that. I don't think I even played another. I played like one more land in the game and basically didn't cast a spell.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, I think that oftentimes that's the case. I don't know that this is the luckiest I've ever been, but there was a time in my life where my friends all considered me a luck sack. And it was only exemplified when it was at SCG in Vegas, and I think I went 4-4 with Merfolk and cashed. I somehow was the only person with a 4-4 record that cashed that SCG.
Oh, sure. The old, like, 64th place.
Yeah. I don't know how it happened. And then that night, I went out with Matt Kling in Vegas, and we were at Planet Hollywood. And I think that we had both won a bunch of money on roulette and blackjack. And I looked on the ground as we were walking and found a $100 chip.
That sounds pretty lucky. Like,
and so it was like the run goods that weekend. And yeah, I was really lucky. Like,
so I would generally say that if other people consider you really lucky, I would just say that's you being really good in disguise. Because if people...
At life?
Well, cleverly finding that $100 chip. It's called watching where you're going. Surveying your surroundings.
I'm talking about Magic specifically, but if you're consistently told how lucky you are, it probably just means you're winning a lot.
That was the case back then. I mean, even though I went 4-4 in that tournament. But I did top 16 the SCG that weekend in Standard. But no, I think that, like, that is one moment that taught me that, like, luck does exist. But it's funny because, like, how many times have I also lost money in my life?
Plenty, right? I mean, it's just about, like, what sticks out. I don't know
where
I
swear I had a $20 bill. Like, where did this $20 bill go? Like, that's happened to me a ton of times.
Oh, sure.
But it's a way less interesting story, right? Which one sticks with you more?
And the time that I found a $100 chip, put it on black, and then, you know.
Yeah, found a $200 chip. So powerful.
Exactly.
That is powerful.
Well, let's talk about the time. You know, I think what's important is, like, remember that these moments are... Remembering these moments is important in the times where you aren't lucky, right? You kind of talked about this a little bit, Michael, where a lot of times where you're lucky, it's because your opponent got unlucky. When we were downstairs deciding what to talk about this week, we talked about, like, the number of times where your out is your opponent getting unlucky. That's an out.
Yeah.
But what really actually good is out. The out is you getting lucky, right? It's the same thing, but you don't like looking at it that way. Because it's a better story if you weren't lucky, right?
Yeah, no, your opponent was just some idiot that got super unlucky.
Well, right, better story than you being a luck sack.
So I think people just equate, like, luck to being bad too much, where the truth is, like, you often need to be more lucky if you play badly. So there's sort of a correlation in the sense that no matter how badly you play, if your opponent's
gosh,
deck
you just
hates
had
them,
a light bulb moment for me.
Right? If your opponent if your opponent plays terribly, you can, or is insanely unlucky, you can basically win almost no matter what you do. But plenty of the time, you know, you need something to go right. Like, the idea that everything can go wrong and you can skill your way out of it just isn't
a thing. I have a really big picture thought on this right now. How many people get insanely lucky but don't use it to their advantage because they're bad?
Oh, all the time, constantly.
How many people open a sealed pool that you would never lose a match with, and they got that sealed pool and you didn't?
All the time. It's even worse back in the old days when you had to pass it to them.
Just for the feel bads?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of, like, it's always a mixture. Like, you can't draw all the worst cards in your deck every turn.
But what happens is the better you are at Magic, the more, it's what you said, the more people say, oh, I was lucky, you're unlucky, right? The truth is that it's been happening to everybody all the time. The thing is you only recognize variance because you're getting better at Magic. But it's just inherent in the game. and you're not more lucky or less lucky than somebody else. You just can either capitalize it or not capitalize it, depending on how good you are.
It's that you generally require less, right? If you were really lucky but then lost and don't even realize that you got lucky to be in a position where you had a way to win, you're just going to not think you were lucky.
Yeah, or like sometimes you got really lucky and the game just felt kind of normal, so it didn't feel that way. Like you just curved out and won. But like your opponent,
right?
Didn't
but you were on the draw and top decked Winding Constrictor into Rishkar into Verdurous Gearhulk.
It's
like,
so
oh,
funny
yeah, that's what
because,
the deck does.
Right. Because think of them like I think that I actually had this moment. I didn't even realize that I was doing this week. I actually Kisi was watching this match where at the end of the match I literally clapped my hands and was like I played so tight. It was round what was it round four?
Round three
because I 3-0'd to be able to double draw. So I in round three I like clapped my hands at the end. I was like oh my gosh I had to play so tight. What was happening is I was getting unlucky. I drew 5 spells in that game and like won the game. Eventually that I drew out of it, but like I had drawn 5 spells by like turn 13, right? And I was super unlucky. But instead of realizing that there was variance going on, I just congratulated myself on beating the unluckiness. But I have to remember that moment when I have a moment where I'm like, turn one, Aether, attune with Aether. Turn two, Servant. Turn three, Marvel. Turn four, Embercool. Like,
sure. Yeah. It goes both ways, right? Sometimes your deck decides it loves you. Sometimes your deck decides it hates you, and you just put up with it.
So what's funny about that match actually is because I wasn't watching it, I was playing my match. My match finished just before yours, and what I came over to is seeing you have 3 Gearhulks and a Planeswalker in play, and your opponent having nothing, and you complaining about how unlucky you are.
I was not complaining.
I'm just kidding. But that's.
Let's be clear. I never once complained. No, I used my Gearhulks to kill. My opponent drew like probably 17 spells, and I had to navigate my way through that. It was intense. But it speaks to what Michael said, right? Like I had to make the correct lines to even recognize that something like that is happening. I gave myself a chance to win through that unluckiness. When you talk about LSV or, you know, all these people and they talk about how lucky they are, well, yeah, they play a ton of Magic. They're going to get lucky a large percentage of the time comparatively if you think about the number of times where their opponents were bad enough not to, like, capitalize on their luck.
Yeah.
It just makes them look luckier.
Right. When you play correctly almost all the time, then when you actually get a chance, you almost always win because of it. Whereas if you're not gonna win the game anyways, you can draw pretty well and just still lose, right?
Yeah, very true. I mean, there's plenty of opportunity. Like playing a lot of Magic, you're going to be on both ends of that spectrum a lot. Just enough games, like you're gonna fall everywhere on the 100% lucky to 0% lucky spectrum, and that's yeah. Just knowing how to get the most out of it when you are being the lucky player, not squandering that. And then kind of hoping that your opponent does squander it a little bit when you are on the unlucky side of it. And that's how you end up winning a lot of Magic.
Yeah, I mean, I will say the biggest indicator to me that, like, I've improved at Magic is I very rarely feel like I lose to someone much worse than me. And I think that's mostly because they have to be able to... Someone has to be good enough to take advantage of the variance they get because I'm not giving them a huge number of edges. Right, I'm not going to just hand them a game, so they have to figure out a way to take it. And when you like, as you start realizing that you're playing better, or whatever, it's really nice because it allows you to realize that you actually are making yourself lucky, right? Like LSV is making himself lucky because when he gets lucky, it is like directly translating into wins.
I for a long time said that the best piece of Magic advice that was ever given to me was by Brian Holly, who's now in R&D at Wizards of the Coast. He was a Utah Magic player. And he talked about putting yourself in the best position to win is really putting yourself in the best position to get lucky. And it was something that I took with me forever. Like, that's what you're really doing, right? Like, when you don't think about it that way, when you draw your 4-outer that you played to draw... But, like, you have a 4-outer. You're lucky to draw that 4-outer. The chances are typically that you don't draw it.
Right.
But when you draw it, you feel super smart. What you did is you put yourself in a position to get lucky. But what happens so often to people is they say, my opponent got so lucky, my opponent got so lucky. Did your opponent get lucky, or did they put themselves in the right position to get have that happen to themselves?
Right. It's very easy to it's relatively easy to draw the four outer, right? Like, you have no control over it, but it can happen. That's the easy part. It's making sure that if you do draw your out, that you actually win the game because of it.
Right. Navigating the game to a position where you're on a four outer instead of a zero outer.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And I think that that's a big part of it. And when you can recognize that that's happening, that that's what the game is about, it actually really helps with the tilt aspect as well, because it gives you, like, you don't always have control over the outcome, but you always have control over putting yourself in the best position to be able to take advantage of the good things that happen to you.
And even more than that, oftentimes the things that you are in control of are the things that you are considering bad luck, right? The number of times that I hear people, like, keep five landers in limited and then complain that they got mana flooded is like, well, what hand did you keep? Oh, it was a two drop and a three drop and five lands. And I'm like...
Well, and it's not necessarily even that you can't keep that. It's just that you can't consider... Drawing too many lands is just a risk,
yeah,
right?
Like, you now have just said that you accept that if you draw land, and your opponent has a reasonable start, you're likely to lose the game.
The flip side is you're not necessarily supposed to mulligan to six, because then maybe you have one land, and now you're lucky anytime you don't draw land, right? I mean, it's about, like, recognizing what you have control over, not necessarily about what is even the correct play.
Yeah, exactly. And just realizing what the percentages are. Like, one, I mean, if everything were truly random, right, you have basically a 50-50 chance of being the luckier player in any given game. That's just how that works. Whether or not that affects the matchup or anything in a meaningful way is different, but one of the players is going to be luckier than the other in every game. That's just going to be true. So you have to figure out, basically just not wasting those opportunities. And if you are looking at a five lander, say, okay, that leaves 33 cards in my deck, 12 of which are lands, a little less than one in three cards is a land. If I draw, even if I do draw two spells in one land, is that likely going to be enough in my first few draw steps? That's, you know, that's the average ratio, but is that really going to be enough?
And then you can decide from there, right?
You know, you can just make informed decisions. You can't just be like, okay, well, I've got a two drop and a three drop. That's going to be enough to win. And then get mad if you draw two lands.
Right. And even before that, I mean, you get so much control over, like, the which cards you put in your deck. Did you put a card in your sideboard that should have been in your main deck in a sealed pool? Did you draft well? Right. I mean, you have so much control over so many different aspects. In Constructed, how did you build your 75? What do you have access to? You know, how well do you know your deck? How able are you to avoid mistakes that are going to, you know, give you less outs? Like, there's so much that goes into it outside of just luck in, like, drawing a single card, that it's kind of a funny thing to get you two up or down, right? Like, a lot of the time you do the best you can and you hope it's good enough, and sometimes the card is there and sometimes it's not, but that's all you're trying to do, right? Give yourself the best chance you can.
Yeah, that's really the only thing you can do.
I think that's the whole point here, is that you need to be putting yourself in a position to get lucky, which is the best position to win. You know, think about that, and don't think about how unlucky you are or how lucky your opponent is, because at the end of the day, like, you've gotten lucky a lot of times. You opened a pool with Pack Rat. You trust me, you've been there, and it's not important that you've been there. It's not important that you're not there now. What's important is what's in front of you and getting to the spot where you can win the game that you're in, because everything else doesn't matter except for that W. So, all right. That's it. Anything else?
I like that. I think just the focus on putting yourself in the best position you can be.
You can become a patron of the show by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. The next goal on the show, so if we are 57% of the way there, and if we get to the next goal, we will give out card of the week every single week on the show. Giving out cards. If you're a patron of $3 or more per month, you are eligible for card of the week, and we will we ship them out every month. At the end of the month, we give out all the cards of the week that we do on the show, as well as tokens. So if you want some tokens made by the cast, once we get to our next goal, we'll be shipping those out to everybody who is current patron as well as new patron. So you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg to become a patron of the show. You can also support the show sponsor at Oasis Games. You can go to OasisGamesSLC.com, MTGOasis.com. You can win $400 store credit to Oasis by submitting a logo we talked about at the beginning of the show to Alex at OasisCCG.com, or you can just send it to me and I'll get it over to Alex. So that is a huge way to support the show, and we love Oasis, so check them out. Where can people find you, Casey?
You can find me on Twitter at CCBloodthirst or on Facebook at Casey Tuna Bloodworth.
Michael?
You can find me on Facebook, Michael Hinderocker, or on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG. I also just wanted to give a quick shout out to the two listeners that I ran into at GP Vancouver this week. I believe it was Evan and Dan. They were both really great. Nice to get to talk to both of you guys.
I love Dan.
Really nice guy.
I've met Evan and I like him too. So shout out to both. I agree. Shout out to both of them. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find me on Facebook in the Facebook group. You can join it. Just search Constructive Criticism Family and we can get you an ad. You can find the podcast every week on ConstructiveCriticism.com, MTGCast.com, and YouTube.com. You can also check out the YouTube channel where we have a video every week, as well as multiple videos. So we're going to start doing testing videos again as soon as possible. I'm really excited about it. I now have full access to the things that we need to get it done, and I'm super excited to get that started again. We also have a deck tech and a weekly vlog on that YouTube channel. Just search Constructive Criticism and go subscribe. It's awesome. You can also join the clan by messaging me at Spencer13Dev on MTGO or Quinn at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTRYPE.
Boom.
Boom, boom. Boom. Let's
Hashtag boom.
It's so funny because I asked Michael what the stab rating of his hotel was this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, these are the important questions in life, though.
Yeah.
Well, I have no stab wounds, so it can't have been that high.
All right. Hashtag weather be good. Hashtag weather be that would. That's not getting edited out. Hashtag weather be good is the Twitter outreach program of this podcast. If you tweet it, we will read it, as Michael likes me to say.
That just has a good ring to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just marketing 101.
Well, we have KTO-TO at Puli Andres. Is Andres? Enders? Enders. Poly Anders? Not sure. I also can't read this, but it says hashtag would be good, hashtag strange, hashtag like, hashtag life, hashtag history, hashtag English, hashtag day, hashtag night, hashtag English?
I feel like this isn't intended for us.
So I did Google Translate it, and it says, sometimes it is cool for a few seconds to fall out of reality.
Hashtag would that be good, hashtag strange, hashtag like, hashtag life, hashtag history, hashtag English, hashtag day, hashtag night.
Yeah, mine was translated, sometimes it is so cool for a few seconds to fall away from the reality. So
mine was translated, sometimes it is so cool for a few seconds to fall away from the reality.
That's literally what I just said.
But mine has a different emoji than yours at the end.
Well, you know, emojis are hard to translate. Everyone knows that.
Mine has like two stars.
That's what Michael's has. Mine has like a lacrosse head.
Yeah, your translator's
messed
up. I don't
think that's an emoji. I don't think that there's any emoji that's that.
I do think that at times I wish that I could leave reality for a moment. So yeah, hashtag that would be good. Yeah,
thanks, KTOTO. Keep tweeting to us.
At Maelstrom Hermit says, at CCMD, bug control / mid-range in modern as a result of Fader Push. Hashtag would be good. I hope so. I do like bug a lot. I love blue-green decks in general. And bug is one of, you know, those options. So I would like that a lot.
That would be a cool deck to have around.
Here's the thing about Fatal Push. So many people were trying out Fatal Push that I think that it made like the big mana decks look better than they actually are. So there will probably be a point with Fatal Push in the format where people can try bug or blue black or things like that with Fatal Push. And it will be cool.
It like almost next leveled itself.
It really did.
Right? Where, like, it's so good that it, like, pre-invalidated some of the things that would be worst against it.
Yep. Yeah. It's kind of intriguing.
Meaning that the people who actually played Fatal Push didn't do very well with it because they didn't play anyone at the top tables with targets for it.
I actually don't know if this person is meaning to tweet at us, but it's funny if they're not. It says, it's from @LL or IL? I can never tell on Twitter.
No, it's from Ghost Ass.
I was going to say ass on the podcast. But it's @LLOBMIRT.
But when that's their name, you really can't just... That's a great name.
We don't swear on this podcast. I mean, it's ass.
It's their name.
It's true. His name is Ghost Ass.
You didn't mean him? You're not his mother?
And it's a good name.
#MTG. I would be okay with an Enter the Battlefield tap land if it had three basic land types. #Would that be good? That card would be way too good in Modern.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I don't know how often.
How many times do you fetch end of turn?
It would be a really powerful one or two of.
I think it would be good. I don't think that it would be like format
maybe
warping.
That's what it would be.
I don't think you'd play a lot of them because they're probably bad to draw, but if you're like end of turn fetching and you're casually
fixed. You played Savage Lands in Jund at the very beginning of Modern.
Gross.
This card's a way better Savage Lands.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that it would be exactly a one of, maybe a two of in some like really slow decks.
But it would be a good one of, yeah, right?
It would be very good.
Just like you don't usually
play
need
one of those in Jund and in Scapeshift.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, it seems super reasonable. Like, if you want to play a three-color deck, I definitely think decks would be playing at one of these. I don't know that it's, like, a card you want a lot more than one of. Like, having one to fetch feels like exactly the right number.
Yeah, because drawing it really does feel like a disaster. You could play Savage Lands, and you already have no interest in that, right?
Classic Spencer Tyvo is next on Discord for a minute before I had to add out to a party. Join the @CCMTG Discord at discord.gg/XGSQ #MTG # would that be good?
I'm glad we read the
Discord.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? You can join the Discord. That is the entrance. Casey, why haven't you joined?
I don't even know what Discord is, so there's that.
It's like AOL Instant Messenger, but it's like an IRC chat room.
It's
honestly
Slack, but worse.
No, I'm not doing that.
You should probably do it.
No, I already have too much of this stuff on my phone. I'm not doing that. It's cool. I mean, any ways that like the community can get together is awesome.
It's specifically for like playtesting. It's Slack with voice, so sure. Like you can join a voice channel and it will just like it's good Skype. So maybe I should put it that way.
It's a replacement for TeamSpeak.
Yeah.
Sure.
Which used to be big back in the day.
Yeah, Ventrilo, similarly. Yeah.
I mean, it's like a good version of all the things that you hated in the past. It's much better than all of the stuff that it's compared to, except for Slack.
Sure.
Because it's like, I swear it stole half of Slack. I don't know. Anyway. My top 8, my first standard PPTQ today, #good, lost in the first round of it, though. Yeah, it's always great when you achieve a magic accomplishment. So congratulations, Adrian.
Yeah, 8th is better than 9th, and you know, keep getting there.
It's also better than 2nd, to be honest with you.
Yeah, sometimes. So I think
only if you're playing against Austin Geltz.
No, it's always better than the 2nd.
I think 2nd is really bad. 9th is really bad. Top 8 is good. It's a good starting point, you know, right? Like if you...
It's nice.
You can't ever win one without top 8ing at least that one first, right?
So, exactly.
And getting top 8s, getting into the groove of top 8ing these tournaments, definitely
it gets easier, yeah, right? Yep. Sometimes you need to get beaten a couple of times before it clicks.
Looks like I'm not the only one with typos. Look like they might have made Modern great again. # would that be good? #MTG.
I didn't watch a lot of coverage.
I like the collective response.
I have a hard time feeling like the tournament where these numbers of decks came out is Modern being great again. But, I mean, we can have different definitions of great. That's the thing about words like that is they don't really mean anything. So whatever great is to you, I mean, is great. Like,
what did you guys learn this week?
Don't look at me as you say that.
That some people have a very different definition of great than me.
Michael?
I feel like I learned a lot about perspective on being lucky and unlucky, and understanding that most of the time, if you were describing yourself as chronically unlucky or chronically lucky, it's just not really true.
I agree. I learned that Michael is a savage who doesn't like Kesha. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week.
Magic.